we must take white people on every issue that
and
deals
their
with
agents
our,
absolutely. That look like us.
Yes, on every issue that deals with the question of our humanity and our self-determination. Mm. But we must make a critical distinction of who are friends and who are enemies. This is not something that Omowale is saying. If we look at where people make revolution around the world, because sometimes people talk about Africa and then refuse to look at the analysis in Africa, whether it was Samora Michel or Milcar Gabral or Augusto Neto
or Frantz Fanon.
These leaders made an analysis of, first, it is a system we are fighting.
Right.
And in the process of fighting that system is how we will know our friends and enemy. And if racism is perpetrated against us, we'll call it what it is. But we're not going to have a knee-jerk response and hide behind the, one would say, the paralysis of the boogeyman behind every door, when in fact we're intelligent, creative, and badass people. And we can, in fact, make a critical analysis of what's going on. I remember a person who was always very dear to me, and the sense of, I mean, we could fight and differ around different stuff, and I guess it's all right to, and if it ain't all right, but Samori Marksman, as a leader in terms of the truth. Samori and I used to work together at Brooklyn Neighborhood Improvement Association. And I remember when we were working there, we would have these discussions. And one of the ones he's had was with me was around the question of the international nature of our struggle. Mm. And we used to always discuss that question around internationalism, and that we cannot be myopic and narrow in what we're talking about. Mm. You know, we talked with Ilumbe about that many times, that the crisis in the Congo and the treachery in the Congo mm. is not in isolation from the treachery inside our own community.
That's right.
The treachery is there.
That's
it's
right.
No different than the treachery inside the white community. You know,
that's right.
I said the other night somewhere that people remember Malcolm long after Roy Wilkins is dead.
Mm-hmm.
People remember Joe Hill mm-hmm. long after I.W. Abel is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And they remember them because of the principles that they represented, but most importantly, in terms of their class interests,
mm-hmm.
their class interest was inexorably turned towards the masses of our people. You know, in Geneva, at the Human Rights Commission, when the United States came to try to defend it becoming signing on to the Treaty on Civil and Political Rights, they had this whole document there. It seemed like it was about 4,000 pages. And what they said is the United States is a country of law, and we protect individual rights. And we laughed and we said, okay, if you protect individual rights in your country of law, then explain to me how one out of three young brothers between 18 and 35 are in the criminal justice system.
Mm.
If that's the case, then why is the male mortality rate in Harlem the same as Bangladesh?
Right.
See, you can't explain away the reality of our situation by manipulating, one, the English language, or subverting the question that these are social questions. They're not individual questions. So I say to the listeners of WBAI, which I have been on various occasions, numbers of times, be critical thinkers. Be critical thinkers and understand the battle in the black community has to intensify just as it has to in the white community.
Absolutely.
Sometimes people talk about the old left.
Yeah.
And my position is, when they say the old left, does that mean that you all tired now and you done given up?
No,
and
I
bones are cracking.
No, I
and
haven't.
Shit like that.
No.
Oh, I can't say that.
Back up. Anyway, it's time now. And Father Lucas, I want to thank you for giving me the time and the intelligence and the assessment that you have.
Thank you a million.
Yeah, I know that you have another place to go to.
Right.
And I know that you are going to give them not love, but hell.
That's right, too.
I know that.
A
I know that.
Hell.
Have a lovely, lovely weekend, and God bless
and
you.
And saying goodbye to Karen and Omowale.
Yeah.
Straight ahead.
Yeah.
Straight ahead, Father Lucas.
Okay.
To
no
all my
peace
elders.
Without justice.
Right.
Before we go, I have another guest who's going to be on the phone, and then... But first, we'll play some music, and I don't know, Omowale, if you've heard this here. You may have. Can we play some music, Mark? Mark is my engineer. And no. Oh, that was Orson Welles' introduction.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
There we go.
I want you to hear this. This is the group that did the benefit.
Jukebox, the great poet.
Yeah. To me, that was, I played this before, and by a group called Rage Against the Machine, and that was recorded in Detroit quite a while ago in front of about a baseball field, about 60,000 young people. And that's the same group that did the benefit in the New York Giants, the Jets, football field and raise money for Mumia's defense. And that song, based on a poem by Allen Ginsberg, for me is a wonderful history lesson of the class structure of this society. That's basically what it's about. And Allen understood that very well in their interpretation. And I can listen to it, you know, a number of times, and it teaches you a lot of lessons. Before we go to the listeners, we're going to make a call, and a friend of the station, matter of fact, who worked at the station, I believe he's still listed as Errol Maitland. Are you on the phone?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Right. Mark is here. Karen is here. Omawale is here, and I'm here, and you're there.
And yes, I am. I don't know how long I'm going to be here for, given the fact that every night I go to sleep, I have bad dreams, and I wake up with continued chest pain, diagnosed with unstable angina, and some of my doctors are deathly afraid that I could drop dead of a heart attack in a moment, so...
But you're not going
to
do that.
I'm here above ground. I'd like to continue to celebrate. And continue to struggle, if not physically, at least in spirit. So, thank you very much for having me on your show today.
No. It's my pleasure. Were you listening to the show when Father Lucas...
Yes, I was. And I was listening to... You know, I'm not a Christian, but I want to tell you that I know I have a priest... named Father Lucas, and while I'm not a member of any organization except October 22nd Coalition to End Police Brutality and Repression and Criminalization of the Generation, I do have a leader and a general who knows how to guide the people of the community, who is extremely articulate, and I salute Omawale Clay, and by extension, I'd like to salute Sister Harriet Tubman, and Sister Harriet for me is Viola Plummer, because she, I think, embodies the spirit of Harriet, embodies the spirit of the African warrior woman, the African warrior queen, and, while we are in a period of darkness, our queens have always been able to show us the light, and they've always been able to confront our enemies and do it so skillfully, and with such grace, and at such great risk to themselves, and they're able to go out there without seeking protection from others because they're that bold and they're that strong to be among the people and not to fear the people. Whether they're friends or enemies, they're able to stand up to them and stand up to them on their own, and that's what Sister Viola represents to me.
Yeah. Omawale, you wanted to say something.
No, I want to just say peace, brother, and... You know, I'm just always proud of brothers and sisters, and particularly, you know, Earl, we go all the way back and stuff, that never give up. You know what I'm saying? There is no license to how long any of us will be here. But I'm glad to see your spirit is still strong. And the pigs got to pay, Earl. The pigs got to pay.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you want to remind people what happened, people who may not know who Errol Maitland is?
Well, you know, as Omawali has said, that, you know, we go way back. And we go way back in the struggle. I think my sustained contact with Omawali has been in the capacity as a journalist who have covered many of the marches and rallies that he has done throughout the city, reclaiming the city from Giuliani or the police or whoever else think that they could rain fascism down on us. I used to do a program on cable TV coming out of City College called Shut 'Em Down. And I've had Omawali on in many occasions. As a matter of fact, because of Omawali, we extended that program from 30 minutes to a 60-minute program because he just had so much information to share with the community. And
I thought you were going to say because of that program, they shut you down.
You know, and we fully expected to be shut down. So I always begin the program by saying the revolution will not be televised. So learn from the information that we are able to get out to you today. Because I always did the show with the premise that it's going to be our last program, and you know, and that you have to be prepared to take to the streets. You have to be prepared to do what you have to do. And so in that spirit, on so long ago now, March, I think it was the 25th, I went to coordinate and to cover the Patrick Dorisman funeral in Brooklyn.
Right.
And I thought, pretty much finished with the coverage of that day's event. I had called into you, Al.
Right, on my show, yes.
Several hours before to explain to you the mood and the tenure of the people. But more importantly, what I had observed on my way to the church, the police assemblage where they were dressed, you know, some of them had coverall on and they were dressed like janitors lurking around churches, occupying rooftops, and just, you know, and amassing to, at some point, attack the people. And I think I did that on your show.
That is correct.
Quite early on in the day. And fortunately, that came true. And I thought I was finished with the day's coverage, and a member of the community, a listener, came to find me to ask me to go confront the politicians and find out why is it they always came into the community and tried to quash the right of the people to peacefully assembly and to, you know, and redress the government. And, you know, folks told me they were on the sidewalk and the police wanted to move them out of the neighborhood. And so I went and I attempted to speak to the politician. And I, stupidly, in the light of balanced journalism, I also try to get the side of the enemy. And, you know, with some expletive, they were told to take me out. Subsequently, after being beaten by the police and stomped by the police, I spent several hours in lockup. But more indignantly, I spent that Saturday, all the rest of that Saturday, chained either to a chair or to my bed. I spent all day Sunday shackled to my bed in intensive care, in King Cardiac Intensive Care, in Kings County Hospital. And a part of Monday also shackled to my bed in cardiac intensive care in Kings County Hospital.
You know, Earl, I just wanted to say to the listeners, so that people are crystal clear, that you were covering a funeral of someone who was murdered by the police in the heart of the black community that was in mourning. And the demonstration that day was a funeral procession, a mass funeral procession in our own community. And the outrage of that, which my view can only have one kind of response, is that the police were there to do what? To protect property? It was our property. To protect us? They're the ones who shot us. So it's just I just want people to just dig on the question that your condition is derived from the question of wanting to get the truth out about what went on at a funeral. And the police who shot someone were still vamping on black people in the heart of our community. Our communities cannot allow anyone armed to come into it and take our lives indiscriminately.
Yeah, I wanted to say, Earl, that in street language, I came out of the streets of Brownsville, East New York, and what the police were saying in that instance, at the behest of the mayor, the police chief, and all the other brass, many of whom I knew as police officers before they became brass, is what they were saying is, this is our turf. Now you will do as we say. Because that was the expression. First of all, there was no need for that many police. Were the mourners going to attack the casket? Were they going to tear down the funeral parlor, the church? I mean, there's no rationale. There's absolutely none. But what this was, on the orders of those people at the top, is we don't care what the natives want. This is our turf, and we will go and do whenever, whatever we want to do.
And that's absolutely right. As a matter of fact, the police set up the situation. They corralled the people in pens. They held the people. They lied to the people. They told the people that they would be able to follow the funeral procession, as they have done before,
right,
and have done in other occasions in our community. One notable one is the funeral of Yusef
Hawkins,
where
yes,
we marched from the church all the way to the funeral.
Right.
That funeral procession stretched at least a mile long.
Yes.
And we marched. The people wanted to march. The police keep promising them, we're going to move the hearse, and as soon as the body comes out and go into the hearse, then we'll let you all go. But what they did was they penned the people in, and then they moved in the ghetto Gestapo squad with the shield and the riot helmet, and they began to crack down on the people. And what we were shown on television was the people responding to the provocation of the police and the brutality that the police was launching at people. And I think I broadcast that fully, and I know my broadcast was being monitored. We have the evidence, we have the tapes, that these guys were there all day long singling out people and targeting people in at that funeral for arrest or for serious bodily harm. And I was one of those people who have been harmed by that. And my voice has been silenced for, I feel, now well over 8 months.
Right.
You know, I have been dying to get back to work. I was in, you know, I promised myself that I'd be back at work. I try to get back to work, but situations are such that my doctors have rescinded the order for me to go back to work because of this fear that my work at this stage would not be rehabilitative but could be further injurious to my health. And they do not want to take the responsibility for my death, you know. But I have been silenced, and that is the greatest tragedy of all, that I have been silenced. There are things that I would like to, you know, would have liked to have done. Namely, I would have liked to have gone to Miami and cover the election. I had been to Miami before, and I could not work because of the beating that I have taken from the police and my psychological condition. That, you know, there are certain situations that irrationally I feel that I I have to avoid. And Omawale, you know, I never avoided anything. You know that we marched from Harlem, you know, from the United Nations to Delancey Street, and we stood out there all night until our comrades were let out of jail. That, you know, that I've always, with a camera or a microphone, gone on the front line and gotten the information back.
I know that, Errol.
And for me, that to be able to do that, for me to be able to go to Miami months before the election and knowing the mood of the people and knowing what was coming down, not to be able to report on that was extremely dreadful. You know, I also have to say that I have never been one who have been allowed my voice to be censored. And I just want people to know that I am not now allowing myself to be censored, except for the fact that I am in deep fear that by my being active, by my being speaking out, by my being an emotional and a loud person, because I've always been a loud person, that that it could be detrimental to my health.
Yeah, you got to be on good terms with your body, Errol.
Yeah, it's absolutely, you know, and so I live to some degree in constant fear of dropping dead.
No, you're not going to drop dead.
But not because I fear dying, but because I would like to, if possible, extend my days a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So my physical condition has forced me in so many ways to be silent. You know, I just want to say this, you know, I don't remember much from going to school, because I think at All Saints Elementary School in Jamaica in the West Indies, I probably hold the record of all times of spending more days out of school than in school. You know, but one thing I did remember when I went to school was that there was a couple of mottos on the wall. One of them had something to do with silence was golden, but I don't remember that one. But there was one on the wall that I remember to this day, and it says, speak the truth, cost it what it will. For he, and I guess today to be politically correct, you have to say, he or she who hides the wrong thing does the wrong thing still. And so, you know, my mother would always remind me that I would always do what I felt I had to do, even though I had to pay the consequences, you know. So I also was the king of getting my butt whipped. And I hold that up as a honor and as a badge of courage. And so I've always spoken out. You know, as a young man during the Vietnam War, decided that I would not go to Vietnam. I would become a conscientious objector, and I would speak up against that war. Right here in New York, several years ago, I sued the City University of New York on the question of free speech, the right to attend, for the public to know what's going on and to attend public meetings. And that's a case that we won, and it has made, I think, some legal history in New York, Smith et al. Versus the City University of New York. And so, you know, New York City Police Department is not going to silence me. No one is going to silence me. I think we have a fundamental right to speak the truth. You know, I think in families, so often we have situation where the family abuse, rape, sexually abuse, psychologically abuse other people, and they do it in the name of respect and respect for the family. And what they do is they try to silence your voice, say that you can't go out and talk outside the family. Well, when there is abuse, people do have a right and an obligation to speak up. Fundamental freedom means that we have a right to speak up, and people have a right to information. People have a right to know how their governmental institutions, their families, or other entities are functioning. It is fundamental. There may be some cost to doing that. There may be some temporary disruption of activities, but we do have a right to know, and a right to know the details and the mechanism of how an organization and and our governmental or our family function. And it may not always lead to things being smooth or function in the as nicely as people want to do, but the means does not always justify the ends. We have to operate in some principled position. And if it's one thing that I have disagreed with Malcolm about, is that African people in this society have not yet inculcate the principle that any means is necessary. We do have principles that we have abided by. And I think one of those fundamental principles is that we have been able to freely communicate with members of our family and gain their consensus. So while I, as a slave on the plantation, does not necessarily want to know all the details, I have all felt that we have always had full access to knowing, and it's only because we may have something that we don't want the enemy to know that we don't tell the old group. But as a group of people, we have always known what's going on, and we have always been able to speak in tongues or in codes to get information out. So while the New York City Police Department is trying to gag me, I won't be gagged. I'm going to be back in court. Scheduled for Wednesday the 31st at 9:30 a.m. in Brooklyn Criminal Court. I think the part is part AP5. And supposedly I'm to go to trial on that day for trying to convey to people in the community the truth as I see it. And so I'm just calling on everyone to come out and to support that endeavor.
Yeah. Thank you. Hey, you ain't gonna pass from the scene because I have 2 bushels and a peck home of mangoes. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And you are going to eat all those mangoes.
I certainly will.
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. Thank you, and God bless you. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you very much, Karen. Thank you very much, O'Malley. And
Stay strong, brother.
I thank the listeners, and I thank everyone. And hopefully we will not be silent.
No, we won't. Thank you, Errol. God bless.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's see if anybody's calling. We take a call, please. Good afternoon, you're on the air. Hello? Hello?
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I've been listening to your program since it started, and the first 45 minutes was used on talking about, or at least using Congolese rice as a metaphor for another female, powerful female you really want to talk about, but you don't have the courage to come right out and say what you have to say.
Wait, hold on.
Can I finish my sentence, please?
No, hold on. I did not even mention her.
Not you.
No,
I'm talking
the
about
gentleman.
You.
Okay, so he will be permitted to answer.
That's right.
Go ahead.
I'm talking about Wally, Omar Wally and Father Lucas. And the real traitors to the black community, are men who are misogynists like those two are, and possibly you.
Me?
The real traitors to the black community. It's disgraceful what you've done over the last 4 weeks on your program. Not to heal. You've lived long enough. And I'll never refer to you again as Grandpa Lewis. You've lived long enough to try and be a mediator and a healer, and you have not done that.
Okay.
You've incited riots, if nothing else.
Riots?
That's exactly right.
Right.
Emotional riots. That's what you've done.
Okay.
Oh, emotional riots.
Very good. Okay. I would like Mr. Clay to respond.
Well, I don't think Father Lucas and I have ever been accused of being misogynists, but I would certainly say that my words speak for themselves. I think that people should not hide under the cover, and I thought I was very specific about that, that we should not hide under the cover of women's rights and black human rights when we have taken sides with the enemy of black people.
And the frustrations
that we have in terms of the debate, I think your efforts should be more channeled towards there being a free and open debate than it should be on the question of me articulating my view. I've laid out my view. You understand it, I am sure, and I'm clear now, very clearly. Throwing a label on me of Father Lucas of misogyny obscures the real question. There should be an open debate. There will be an open debate. But it doesn't change the fact, my sister,
that on the question of siding with the state, we know who our friends and enemies are. And throwing up women's rights, throwing up racism, cannot hide that fact. But if you want an open debate, I suggest you struggle with the people who are attempting to crush dissent if there's going to be an open debate. But there will be one in the black community, and I understand it's coming up very soon. I know February 21st, which is a commemoration of the assassination of Malcolm X, who talked about the question of house Negroes and field Negroes, who talked about the question of being clear on the question of those people who operate in our community for their own individual opportunistic interests and raise the race question to hide their own careerism and have no politics in terms of that struggle, that we're very clear about that on February 21st. As always, we're struggling to organize to reclaim our community from all forces. We don't tolerate white racism, and we certainly don't tolerate the black petty bourgeoisie who side with the enemy state in this country, because that's not in the interest of black people, my sister. It really isn't. And I understand that they're very clear women issues, and I understand they're very strong black women who are revolutionaries, and I think there's some good lessons to learn from them. But there's class struggle going on in our community, and we don't have to hide from it. Malcolm began to talk about it, but we have to finish that debate. Mm-hmm. Congolese Rice is an apt example, metaphor, and symbol that represents the treachery that goes on inside our community. The treachery. And struggle should go on. Maybe those avenues or institutions or vehicles for communications that exist, some of which don't have the ability to express themselves as they should, maybe this is a good thing if it increases and intensifies strategically the question of class struggle in our community. Because for African people have to deal with that. They're dealing with it from the Congo to Harlem, class treachery under the guise of me, myself, and I.
Thank you. We'll go to the next call, please. Hello, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Hello. Hello. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
Yes, hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Grandpa. Let me just turn my radio.
What happened? He cut himself off. Yeah. Hello.
Good day, Grandpa.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to say, first of all, that was quite an appropriate response, Omar. One thing that's been guiding me throughout all of this is the wisdom of Dr. King saying it's a content of character, not a question of color.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been my guiding principle throughout this whole learning process. And one thing I'd like to know about that question is, Grandpa, somebody who has nothing to do with any of this, the prisoners,
mm-hmm.
were obviously innocent, though behind bars in this instance. Their mail has been kept from you. What
yes.
has happened to that mail?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I cannot answer that. The only thing I can say, and I don't want to get into internal discussion, but you asked me a question which is an academic. I don't have the mail. A week ago, I guess, I don't remember when, there was a demonstration downstairs, and I had to come up here to get some books that I had promised listeners, that I had advised people to read, and by an unknown American, a great American, great thinker. You may not agree with everything, but this guy, Lysander Spooner, could think, man. I mean, he could think. And I asked, and I don't have the mail. That's all I can say, sir.
Okay, well, that to me tells me a lot, and I think anybody out there who does not forget these people behind bars who are longing for letters, who are longing for some kinship, I only hope that... see, what really saddens me the most in all this is there are people with obvious intelligence who I've admired and still admire, and I hope for them to come to their senses in the sense of aligning that with their compassion.
Mm.
When those fruits of the Spirit get separated from their intelligence, to me, that shows a lack of wisdom.
Thank you. Before we go to the next call, I want to say something. My wife and I were last night at the Michael Flannery Memorial. Michael Flannery was, I don't know, what would I call him? The John Brown of the Irish freedom movement. That's what I would call him. I'm not Irish. And it celebrated 20 years ago in Longkesh. That's the prison. The 10 prisoners who went on a hunger strike and died for Irish freedom. And they were kind enough, the committee, John McDonough, Big B is here, Bernie is here, a number of other people are here, to honor me in giving me the a big Jim Larkin Award for my service to the Irish community. And I want to thank, really, I want to thank John, Big B, all the people. And especially, I want to read very my wife and my three sons, who wrote something in the book that was handed out. And, you know, when you get old, your fingers don't work that well. So don't get old, Omowale. And
stay young forever.
Oh, it's hard, but I'm going to try. I'm going to try. In spite of, not always because of, a page to my beautiful husband, Al, who loves freedom. And this is a quote from Walt Whitman. "I'm for those that have never been mastered, for men and women whose tempers have never been mastered, for those whom laws, theories, conventions can never master. Love, Karen." And then my three sons, Dave, Ted, and Paul. This is from G.B., that's George Bernard Shaw, the devil's disciple. And one of the characters says, Swindon, "What will history say?" And Burgoyne says, "History, sir, will tell lies as usual. But not you, Pop." I want to thank you all. I'm a little moved by my family. God bless you. I wish for you, like I used to say every time I worked the nightclub, bucket of blood, sawdust on the floor, or a 3,000-seat house. I wish for all of you what I wish for myself. God bless you. Have a lovely weekend. And again, John and all the rest of you, thank you. Thank you. You got it, John.